This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Welcome to the Counter Narrative Podcast, a show designed to change the way we talk and think about education. By sharing stories of successes and triumphs, we aim to challenge the dominant narrative that often negatively portrays our disenfranchised populations. I'm your host, Charles Williams, an urban educator for more than 15 years, a current school principal in Chicago, an educational consultant, an equity advocate, and the co-host of Inside the Principal's Office. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the Counter Narrative Podcast. As always, thank you so much for joining me as we are closing out the school year. I am trying to make sure that we are finishing the podcast season on a strong note. And I thought, what better way than to connect with someone? Well, we have not shared space, but she has come highly, highly recommended from a good friend of mine. And I said, hey, we got to have this conversation. And so tonight on the show, we have Stephanie. Tell us, Stephanie, how are you?
Mid, as the kids would say. I am mid. I'm learning how to say what I really mid, am. Instead, yeah, you know, yeah. The general's like, oh, I'm great. Like, no, I'm mid.
Yeah. And and it's okay to be like, you know, I'm okay. Yeah. Like, So for those of the listeners who are like, I don't know who this person is who's coming in here talking like one of these whippersnappers. tell us a little bit about who you are. What is your role in education? What is your journey? Tell us, who is
that
Stephanie?
That is always such a wild question of like, well, who are you? What do you do? Why do you do it? I am a human living life. and that sounds very, very non-sincere, but it actually is. And it'll make more sense as I keep talking about the work that I do. I taught for over 10 years in middle school. Shout out to my fellow middies. And I currently have my own coaching and consulting business where I serve as a transformational learning coach and consultant, helping people to improve, advance on their own transformation and liberation journeys by centering healing and joyful liberation. I primarily work with educators that are looking to make sure that their students are seen, heard, valued, and affirmed. And I also work specifically with Black women as well, in reclaiming our dignity and humanity. I am the daughter of an educator. I feel like I'm saying a lot. I'll work on that.
Oh, it's all right. No worries. We are in an authentic space. So is your thing.
I am the daughter of an educator. So even though I only taught for a little bit over 10 years, I feel like education has been my entire life. I watched my mom give her life to education. She retired 3 different times and only finally left when COVID hit because her doctor told her it was not in her best interest to continue working in schools. So I am very passionate about education. I see education as a tool for liberation and a way for all of us to get free. And so that is my approach. I am learning as I am still on my own journey and just trying to help as many people along their own journeys as I can.
Well, man, I appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to learning more, you know, about you as we have this conversation. I am honored to have a number of coaches and consultants as part of my edu crew. And, you know, we're just out here, right, trying to make the world that much better, right? As we guide and support and assist one another and others to just to figure out who they are so that they could be the best versions of themselves. And so that way we can, you know, positively impact the space. And so I'm honored to be adding you to that grouping. I'm sure as they listen to this episode, you know, they will be like, oh, we got to reach out. We got to connect. We've got to collaborate. So I find it interesting about how you're talking about mm-hmm. education as a tool for liberation. And I absolutely agree. You know, years ago when I was first starting teaching, you know, and I thought I was so witty and clever, I remember having this quote, and so much so, like, I printed it out. But remember, this was back, like, with, like, the dot matrix and, like, printer paper that was all connected together. So I remember printing it out, right, on multiple sheets of paper, like just like tearing off the edges, putting it up on the wall, you know, that ignorance enslaves the mind and education mm-hmm. sets it free. And so as you're talking about this idea of education is a tool for liberation, so many thoughts ran into my mind, right, from my experiences over the years, from the work that I do. And so I'm very curious, with this being mm-hmm. your background and the work that you do, as we talk on this show about saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to challenge the narrative, and whether that's pushing back against a dominant narrative or to say, you know what, I'm going to alter, you know, provide an alternative perspective. I'm curious, as we're getting ready to dive in, what is it that you want to talk about tonight?
I really want to talk about just being. And that seems counterintuitive, because in education, the focus should be, emphasis on should, be on the students. It often is on a lot of other things, and a lot of educators who are working to improve the system and to provide students with the best education possible put a lot of their time and energy into their students, but it comes at an expense, and that expense is us. I think oftentimes we romanticize the movement, the civil rights movement, any type of movement that is happening, and we fashion ourselves, you know, social justice warriors or Jedis and these things along those lines. And I finally have come to a point in my life where I'm like, I don't want to do this. I thought I was living a free life, and I realized that I was living my life in opposition to limitations of, you're telling me I can't do this as a Black woman, as a queer Black woman, as all of these other intersectional identities that I have. And so I'm going to show you I can do it, and I'm going to stick it to you. And I thought that that was freedom, because I could see the cage and I'm like, I'm not going to go in it, and not realizing that I myself am also still in another cage, right? It's two sides of the same coins. And so what does it mean to truly be free? You use that a lot. We talk about freedom, we talk about liberation, but what does that really mean? And what does that mean in the context of educators and education and working to equip the next generation with the tools that they need so that they can have an equitable society and life?
You know, I love that you're saying this. Recently, I've started playing around with this concept, and I've been teasing it out there here and there. So I'm going to do the same thing here, is that I used to take a lot of pride, and I still do in a certain capacity, of when we talk about the idea of mm-hmm. being like servant leaders. But I think at some point, as you talked about this idea of romanticizing, right, this concept of, at some point it feels that servant leadership mm-hmm. has become sacrificial mm-hmm. leadership, right? Whether we're leading a school, whether we're leading our classrooms, that the only way in order to be effective is that I must mm-hmm. give my all, and not do my best, but I must give my absolute all, my entire self to this thing. I must throw myself upon the altar, and but for what, right? And you're right, as it's gotten to the point where I've started to say, I will be a servant. I will lead. I will make sure that my people are taken care of, but I will not sacrifice myself in that process, because at the end of the day, being an educator is a portion of who I am. I am a father. I am a husband. I am a friend. I am a brother, right? I am all of these other things. And if I sacrifice who I am for this work, for this cause, then there's nothing left for those other spaces. And so, you know, it's finding, you know, that balance. And so I'm curious, as we're having this, because, you know, you mentioned like defining liberation. And so if I was an educator and I was to say, Steph, like, what do you mean? Like, how do you define liberation? And how are we maybe getting that wrong, you know, in this work that we're doing?
So I don't have an answer.
Thank you for being honest.
I am still actively working out my definition of liberation. These are all like within the last 12 months, not all, but specifically the whole concept of realizing that I was living in opposition and not freedom. That's a realization that I had in the last 12 months. With regular talks with my therapist, I highly, highly recommend therapy for everybody. And realizing that a lot of my core beliefs were actually toxic in nature, but I didn't get challenged a lot because I was a really good kid. Mm. I was smart. I liked helping other people learn. I like learning. I didn't want to be bothered. I want to read a book. Like, hey, we talk about learning. Cool. I'm in. Let's do it. I got a little personality too. So I didn't cause a lot of issues, which ultimately was a hindrance to me because I have a very moderate / severe anxiety disorder that did not get diagnosed until I was a senior in high school and did not start getting fully treated until the last couple of years because I wasn't disruptive. I wasn't, you know, a problem person. So I didn't need anything, right? You just needed to teach me what you wanted to teach me and everything was great. But that actually wasn't the full story for me. I was struggling emotionally, although my grades never slipped. When I went to college, I was progressed to severe clinical depression and was put on suicide watch. My GPA never slipped below 3.8 during all of that. So based on the performance indicators, I was thriving, but mentally, I was not. I was not okay. And so having that struggle of like, well, I don't know why I'm not okay. I'm great. I have two parents who love me. I'm in college on a full ride. Like, what could be wrong? And realizing now that a lot of it was, you know, you can chop it up to toxic positivity. You can chalk it up to just the realities of being a Black woman and consistently receiving the message that I wasn't good enough or that I had to be twice as good. And we talk about all the trauma. We often think about like the most severe trauma, such as physical abuse or things along those lines, but we don't talk about the emotional and mental trauma that our students and we ourselves as educators are going through every day, just trying to process and show up in a world that doesn't want us to exist, that doesn't want us to thrive. Like that is the reality of my existence in America. I'm literally in a country that was built upon my subjugation. So how can I find joy and happiness? How can I find liberation? How can I find freedom when the very fabric of where I exist, the very water that I swim in, was created to keep me subjugated and oppressed? And so we don't talk about that weight and what that means and how to navigate those things. We talk about it a little bit sometimes with kids, and usually only if they are, quote unquote, you can't see me doing the air quotes, problematic or behavior problems because they're not being compliant. So I need you to be compliant. And if you're compliant, then everything's good.
Mm. You know, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, you know, it's interesting whenever I do these, like I hear something and I'm like, all right, that's what I'm going to go into next. And then you say something else. I'm like, ooh, that's also good. So I heard this idea that you were putting out there, this kind of the unseen or maybe unrecognized weight that we carry around, right? That we go through. And I think sometimes you're right. It comes to the forefront. It comes into our face and very, very harsh, very, you know, maybe tangible ways. But when we're okay, when we're
you know, progressing through life and we're succeeding and we're doing well, I think we tend to forget about it, yet it doesn't go anywhere. And so recently my wife and I were down in Atlanta, and we were down there for a conference, and we ended up going into King's Museum. And I remember walking around and I suddenly felt this overwhelming emotional response. And I'm not a very emotional, you know, like textbook emotional person. I try to keep things close to myself, but I felt this overwhelming need to let that out. And I think it was in that space that I recognized this weight, as you were referencing, has been with me. And it was in that space that I was able to act, you know, to acknowledge it, right? And to look at it and to process it and to feel it, because I was not in a space where I was alone. I was not in this vulnerable space where, as you said, that may not understand and recognize. And so I'm curious, for so many of us who are doing this work, and I want to go back to the statement where you talked about living in opposition, but not actual liberation. And, you know, as we're thinking about doing, you know, the work, right, especially in the vein of, you know, with like diversity and equity and inclusion, and, you know, it bothers me when so often people hear the word diversity and they immediately think race. And, you know, I have a grandson who is neurodivergent, and I was listening to something this morning and there was all this conversation around, you know, the fact of like neurodiversity, right? And just how diversity exists in so many different spaces. And so I say all of this to say, as we're doing the work in our respective spaces, as we're pushing back against that opposition, are we truly living in that space of liberation? And so I'm curious if you could maybe help, or if you would you be able to give any of those listeners who are doing that work, like, how did you come to this realization? What was the aha moment for you where they might say, hey, you know what? Let me step back and think about this.
Similar to you, of like, I had everything on paper that is supposed to be successful. I am happily married. I have a wonderful husband. We have a house. We have not yet chosen to have children. And so, you know, we're living footloose and fancy free, and I am still not happy. And it doesn't make sense to me, right? Like, you know, I'm okay. You know, I stopped teaching because it was causing me so much stress. I was having to see sleep therapist and things along those lines. So if that's the biggest stressor, okay, I'm going to put me first and I'm going to do this for my health. And I stopped and I feel better, but I don't feel good. I don't feel great. I don't feel a deep-seated happiness. I remember the first time my therapist, I was just like, are you happy? And I just broke down in tears because I hadn't been happy in years. And so what does that mean if you, to that point about sacrifice and self-sacrificing everything, right? Like, there's no time for joy. There's no time for this frivolous things because there's work to do and the kids need me and everybody else needs me. And I have to put all of these other things that I either want to do, think about, not do, whatever. I don't have time for that. Everything else comes before me. And again, according to the American definition of success, you know, you got a spouse, you got a house, you got a car, you got a well-paying job, you are respected, you got your degrees. And it just, I wasn't happy. And it really went on a quest to understand why I wasn't happy. And realizing that, like, I had never really managed my anxiety. I managed it enough to get by and to do my job. And I was a really, really great teacher for a lot of my neurospicy kids because my anxiety, I had to have a lot of order. I had to have a lot of things, but also a lot of patience and flexibility. But I always got the neurospicy kids. We got along very well. and so, you know, sometimes your burden is also your gift, right? It's a double-edged sword on that end. But realizing, like, I've poured all of this all the things that I learned about how to take care of myself, I didn't apply to myself. I applied to my kids. I applied to my family. I applied to everything outside of me. And really sitting down and thinking through, what do I deserve? What am I worthy of? The world often tells women, and especially Black women, to, you know, sit down, be humble. Like, this is this, you know, take your lot and be okay with it. And so what does it mean to not ascribe to those societal norms anymore, to not feel the pressure to, I grew up in a very African centered home. And so, this was not a pressure my parents put on me. I also want to name that. A lot of my stuff is me and my shenanigans and my brain. But there was this pressure. I felt like, oh, my ancestors, they went through all of these things. Like, you know, my dad's grandfather was enslaved, right? And so, like, I can't rest. These people didn't have a choice of resting. I've got all of these options. I've got all of these things. I have to carry forward this legacy. Or on the flip side, thinking about future children that I might have, or like, I need to build this legacy. You know, I want my children's 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 children to have generational wealth. And everything in my life was centered about everything and everybody but me. And that's when it hit me of like, I don't even know what I like to do. I don't know nothing about me, because everything that I do is about everybody else but me. And that is why I'm unhappy. So when that hit, and that helped a lot, I will also say my primary care doctor was really good in that. She listened to me when I would come in and talk about things, even and similarly unrelated things. Like, she's the one that put me with the sleep therapist and all of these things. And I will say it was her working in conjunction with me of teasing out what, oh, you still don't feel right? Okay, well, let's try this. You still don't feel right? Okay, well, let's try this. And so that really encouraged me versus a minimization of like, well, girl, you don't have nothing to be upset about. Your life is good. Just praise God. You'll be fine. Right. Which is often what happens. Like, when people are not feeling their best selves, because it is not in, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, an absurd state of trauma or disarray, then it's just like, oh, well, you'll be fine because there's work to do. And ultimately, what good is it to get free and I don't feel free? What good is it to do this work and I'm not there, like, mentally or physically, to be able to reap the benefits of this work, to see myself happy, to see my own joy fulfilled in it? Like, I think back to the point of what I was making, we romanticize the movement. We romanticize struggle so much of like, you know, now this I did get from my parents, love them dearly. But I did get this one from them of like, that school was my job, right? I remember my very, the first time one of my principals told me that education was supposed to be joyful. And I just looked at him like he was stupid and had three heads. Like, what are you, joy? This is work, sir. we have people to honor. We have legacies to build. Joy in education. Get out of here with that foolishness. But like, what does it mean to view education as joyful, right? Versus this activity that you have to do and that is enacted upon you. Learning for a lot of folks is very traumatic because it is not approached from a spirit of joy. It's not approached from a spirit of respect or reverence or any of those things. It is this thing that is enacted upon them by other people. And I think oftentimes we try to take back the power that we feel we don't have by controlling everything around us, when the only thing that we can control is ourselves.
Stephanie, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to guess that some of our listeners may have had an emotional response to some of the things that you just said. The idea that, as you were talking and saying, I don't know what it means to be happy, right? That, first of all, thank you for being so transparent and vulnerable in this space and sharing that information. But I believe that that statement may have resonated with so many listening to this. And if not, maybe I'm just projecting my own response to you onto them, because I don't, I know it did for me, right? This idea that this is a byproduct of this romanticized space of what we believe education to be, and this self-sacrificial that we pour in and we make sure that everybody else is taken care of, and we do not stop to figure out who are we in the space and what makes us tick and how are we happy, and yet we're somehow surprised to discover that it's a mm-hmm. joyless space. And so, you know, I don't know if the listeners had paid any attention, but at the beginning of this episode, I had pointed out that this will be one of the final for this, for the time being, because I'm going to do something that I haven't done in the 4 years of recording this, and I'm not recording anything over summer, because I want to take that time to figure out who I am, to find joy, to find happiness with those around me and who care for me. And so that way, as I'm doing this work, I could also be happy with who I am as a person. And so I'm curious if, I know based on some conversations I've had with peers that there are many of others in this space. And so I'm curious as to how would you respond, or how did you go about this journey over this last year of finding that joy, of figuring out what makes you happy, of moving from simply pushing back against spaces to trying to truly find your liberation? What would you say? What are some of those ideas, strategies, tips, tricks, whatever
it might be? So I would first say that it's been longer than a year. We've been building up to the revelation for several years. It just took us a while to get there. So I want to say that, because I think oftentimes when we are looking, when something resonates with us and we're like, oh yes, I feel that way, how did you get there? It feels like that person just magically got there. Not magically, but you know, like, oh, okay. You know, they did a couple of things and then they were there. Like, nah, I want to be very clear. This has been like a 10-year journey. And sometimes it goes very fast and sometimes it's very slow. I vividly remember when I started on it, I went to a presentation. I'm based in Baltimore by the Baltimore Racial Justice Action Group. And they were talking about Christianity and African spirituality and are they compatible and whatnot. So I grew up in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, which is the first Black church in America. And in particular, the church that I grew up in, there were a lot of kids my age. So we were a very child-centric church, and they did a lot of work with us to make sure that we had a strong and positive identity with our race and how we showed up in America. And so we also invoked traditional African practices such as libations and things along those lines. So I've never really necessarily seen them as conflicting. But as I've gotten older, I have had a problem with the way that Christianity is represented, in particular, specifically fundamental Christianity and evangelical. And that doesn't match what I learned about God. And so questioning my own religion is really what started me on this journey of like, well, who is God? If God is the source of everything and I can rely on her or him or whatever word that resonates with you, you know, then what does it mean if I'm questioning this core belief of, if you're saying this is what God is, but this is what I thought God, like, then what is God? Reminds me very much of like Octavia Butler, if you've ever read Parable of the Sower. It's a really great book. And mm-hmm. the main protagonist in there is going through a similar journey of trying to understand God and herself and what that means. And so that's what actually sparked this journey for me in about 2016, 17. And then it's just kind of ebbed and flowed over the course of the years. But more recently, I will specifically speak very highly of Wellbutrin. It is a wonderful drug. It has helped to regulate me. God bless Wellbutrin and the makers of Wellbutrin, as well as my lovely therapist who I see every 2 weeks, because God bless her, because she entertains my shenanigans and foolishness. And because I am not working so hard to regulate my mind and my anxiety, the amount of capacity that I have is exponential. I'm not as mentally tired, so I can engage in thinking about critical things and just thinking for the sake of thinking and wondering like, is this, what is this? Why is this? How is this? What is, I don't know. And it's just made a lot of space for me because it's cleared up a lot of the noise that I've had. So therapy, I will always sing high praises of the therapy. Medication, if you need it, high praises for the medication as well. And it's really just sitting down and doing the work and finding what feels good to you. The same thing that appeals to me may not be what appeals to you, because I entered through a spiritual lane. And so a lot of my work is more, the works that I'm reading are more aligned with that. Co-author Riley wrote this here, Flesh, and it talks about spirituality, liberation, and I forgot the other word. And it's revolutionary for me. I am getting ready to start reading Sean Getwright's The Four Pivots, and he talks a lot about healing-centered engagement. So I think you have to, there's not one thing, right? Just because these people work for me doesn't mean that's what will work for you, because you're going to be entering it from a different lane. And so if you feel yourself drawn to like, oh, I really like those words that, you know, this opposition or liberation, and then start Googling and see what work comes out about that. And, you know, whatever you have questions about, just start Googling those questions or talking to folks, because the book, This Here Flesh, actually came to me from a friend of mine. She was like, I saw this, and based off the conversations that we've been having, I just felt like this would align so well with you. And it did. Right now, I'm really following the works of a lady named Menachi, and she talks a lot about decolonizing nonviolent communication and somatic and embodied practices, which are really big for me. And based off the conversation and some of the things that you said to me, I think you might want to look into that too. I emote very well with people because I know that that is the expectation of me. I just gave a presentation last Friday, and my friend was like, because she came to help me. And so she's like, oh my God, when you said you don't stay in one place when you present, I got whiplash. You was just wandering. And she was like, and then as soon as we got home, you just went dead. And I was like, because I gave all my energy in that place. I don't have it anymore. I'm done. I'm done for the day. I'm an introvert that presents like an extrovert. And so I'm very careful with my emotions. You will see me very happy and giddy, because when I'm happy and giddy, you're not going to ask more questions, right? So we learned how to mask and how to present and how to show up and get people to do what we need them to do in that moment. Because for me, if people paid a lot of attention to me and they really asked how I was doing, I would break down into tears, but nobody ever asked because I was happy, supposedly, right? I was laughing, I was joyful. I did the markers of the behavior, but I didn't feel that in my body. And so I've started practicing embodied practices and somatic practices. And that's breath work. That's just like connect, like feeling things in your body. And I'm like, oh my God, I see why I cried, because I suppressed so much. All right, this makes so much sense. So much digging to do, so much things to unpack. And that might not resonate for somebody else, right? They might be very in touch with their emotions in their body. So part of it is literally just spending time with yourself, asking yourself questions, finding your entry point, and just following the thread. And the journey is a journey in the most annoying sense of it never ends. As soon as you fix one thing, you're like, oh wait, hold on now. There's something else under there. All right, let's keep working and digging. I feel like I rambled a lot, but yes, period, end of sentence.
No. You're absolutely fine. And so, you know, to capture though, I think I heard three pieces. Mm-hmm. One is that it takes time, and I'm happy that you said that right off the bat, that this is not something that happens overnight. It is not a summer project, right? This is something that takes time, and that we must be persistent and consistent as we push through. and that it is difficult and challenging work. So not to be afraid to seek out support, right? Whether that's from another person, whether that's from, you know, the support of medications, right? I know sometimes those things have been demonized, but right, recognizing that support might not be necessary. And last but not least, of being honest with ourselves so that way we can engage in this work very much authentically, right? Your journey and my journey may be similar, but we're going to take, it's very possible that we'll take vastly different pathways. And so not to just jump onto somebody else's pathway because it sounds great and because they saw results, but to be honest and authentic with yourself. And so I just, I really wanted to pull those three pieces out because I think as our listeners leave this space, if there's nothing else, you know, they're thinking about where do I go from here? It's those three things, that that time, that help and support, and being honest and authentic with oneself.
I said that that eloquently. I just want you
to know
that.
So, Stephanie. Yeah, you did. You did. I loved connecting with you and listening to you. I look forward to the time that I will be able to not connect over a virtual space, but to watch you give me whiplash as you move across a stage. And I promise to leave you alone afterwards so you could rest and recoup and regenerate. But until then, how can we connect with you? How can we find you? How can we reach out if we have questions or, you know, whatever it might be? How can we connect
with you? I am not currently active on social media. For numerous reasons. One, it's overwhelming. Two, I have been working on revamping my messaging and the offerings that I want to offer. And so have just been really sitting with myself on that. So very long story short of my website, because I ain't on social media, which is www.stephanietellis.com or by email, which is info@stephanietellis.com. Those are the only ways you can reach me, and as of now.
Hey, and sometimes it's better that way. Like, look, I'm going to filter the way people can access me. So I will make sure to drop that information in the show notes, so that way you could connect with Stephanie. Stephanie, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for obviously jumping on the show and having the conversation. I definitely have to tell Tracy that it was well worth the conversation. But more importantly, thank you for being transparent and vulnerable and doing this work. And whether you're seeing it in this way or not, but to serve as to almost as a role model to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to have these very honest, authentic conversations and hopefully create space where others can have those conversations and do this work. So I just want to say thank you. Thank
Very
you.
Happy to be Thank here. You. Thank you. This was wonderful for me as well.
I want to thank you for listening to the Counter Narrative Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to like, subscribe, and of course, share it with friends and family. I'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show, so please leave a comment or two as well. Now, I'm not sure what platform you're using, but the show can be found on Anchor, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and plenty of other platforms. If the show isn't on your preferred site, let me know, and I'll be sure to get it up and running. This podcast is also featured on schoolrubric.com, where you can find educational articles, videos, and interviews with educators from around the globe. Be sure to connect with me and other listeners by following the show on Twitter at the CN Podcast and joining the show's Facebook group. Take care.